It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We might be on YouTube today. We're having some video stuff. We're going to try to get it squared away. But we might not. That's okay. We're a radio show. We're happy to just turn the lights off, the fancy studio lights. Anthony, it'd be pretty weird if we just did a radio show in the dark. But you could if it was just purely a radio show.
I'd rather not do that.
Okay, well, you have like buttons to hit and stuff that are important. So perhaps not. But I think we're going to try to get some version of the stream going. It seems like StreamYard's being all right now, even if our usual method of doing this is not as we typically want it. But that's all good. That's all fine. We'll do what we got to do. Today on the show, we will get more insight on the Pittsburgh side of things. We will get that from our friend Brooke Pryor, who is a great friend of the show. She is going to join us coming up at 5 o'clock for Not My Beat. You hear from Logan Paulson in a little bit as well. Although I will say, man, B-Rob being out sucks for this game. If you are just tuning in, and I don't even know, did Russell say this at the end of his show, Anthony?
It literally came out after he got off the air. Like, it came out at 4 o'clock.
Ugh. So, Brian Robinson is out. We knew Marshawn Lattimore would be out. But all of a sudden, I started seeing some stuff earlier today that was like, wait a second. B-Rob's been practicing all week. Now, we got this hamstring thing. It's not his knee, it's his hamstring, and you know, we're going to do right by the player. We're going to do this. I'm like, that is all good. That is all good. But it is not sounding like he's going to play, which also seems kind of important. So Brian Robinson is out today, or out on Sunday, and that is particularly a pain in the tuchus, if you will, because a lot of the style of runs, I mean, one, he's their best running back, and obviously the offense with him compared to the offense without him has been pretty significant this year in terms of the drop-off in rush. Yes, I know ESPN.com fantasy that Brian Robinson is in my lineup and downgraded to out. Clearly, they don't listen to the show, or maybe they do. Anyway, I literally just got that alert, Ant. I did too.
I got him in one of my leagues.
Yeah. It's like he's in your lineup. He's not in the Commanders this weekend. So he's obviously their best runner. But I think specifically the kind of vision and cutting and decisiveness that he runs with is the kind of thing that you really need against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. With that said, I'm curious to see who the guy is that kind of takes the reins. Because Jeremy McNichols has had some nice games this season. Austin Eckler's obviously had some big moments this season. But their best runner last week was Chris Rodriguez. And so is Rodriguez the guy who winds up being essentially their number one back this week with Eckler in the usual Eckler role and then McNichols as a guy that when they go two back, he's in there a little bit more. But when they're in, because that's kind of how they did it after McNichols had his big breakout game, was McNichols and Eckler in the, like McNichols and Eckler were in the two-back stuff, which is a big part of their offense, and they can always accentuate or, what's the word, diminish that package. You know, they could use it 10% of the time. They could use it 40% of the time. 40 would probably be a little aggressive, but that's something that can fluctuate to get the snaps right. But on the solo back, it was typically going to be Robinson and just Brian. So if B-Rob is out and you have Chris Rodriguez as the guy, how much are you just putting him like straight one-for-one substitution versus adjusting the packages versus, hey, some of this solo stuff we're just going to give to Eckler because he's the number two back for a reason. So that's going to be really interesting. And this is all against a Pittsburgh Steelers defense that is one of the best in football. And I think that's the other part of this that's like, oh, man, this is rough sledding. Because I'm going to double-check my numbers real quick here to make sure I have them all correct. But I'm pretty sure the Pittsburgh Steelers are the number two rush defense in the NFL in EPA per play. And then I also want to check their success rate. So EPA per play stands for estimated points added, which obviously per play is just, you know, per play. But the success rate is literally the statistic that you're looking at to say, are you staying on schedule? Are you staying in front of the sticks? Because success rate is, do you get to half the yardage that you need for the first down on first and second down? So if it's second and eight and you get 4 yards, that is a successful play, pass or run. And then if you, on third down, obviously need, or fourth down, you need the entirety of the yardage. But Washington has had an ability to stay relatively on schedule this year, and it's because, like, B-Rob can pick up 4 yards real easy. You know, Rodriguez last week was able to do that. Eckler, et cetera, a little less consistent on that front. Their vision is not as good. They're not as slippery. They don't read the stuff as well. And when you look at Pittsburgh's defense, as he slowly but surely navigates live on the radio, because this is what happens when there's breaking news. If you're just tuning in, the breaking news that Brian Robinson is out on Sunday, that you get to look stuff up live and double check all your numbers. So team defense, Anthony, we want, let's see, we want, nope, not QB pressures. They've got all these fancy numbers. We want run defense. And we want, not stuff percentage, stacked, light. Dun, dun, dun. They don't have defensive success rate? That's annoying. They have it on the offensive side, but they don't have it on defense. Anthony, who designed this site? Besides really smart people who are really good at their jobs that put a whole bunch of useful information in one place except for the one piece that I'm looking for right now.
Questions that need answers, Craig.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what I'll give you instead. The Steelers this season have played in light boxes. Where are we? About 45% of the time. They play in stacked boxes, one of the higher rates in the league. They're 12th in one and 13th in the other, 22%. So if I'm them, I'm probably lightening the box a little bit this week. You know, they play in light boxes 45% of the time. If I'm them, I'm probably lightening up the box this week and saying, if you can beat us with Chris Rodriguez against, by the way, now that I have this in front of me, let's be useful with it, against the number two EPA per rush defense in the league, then I go ahead, do that. We're not letting Jaden Daniels beat us with his arm. And we're going to have bodies in case he scrambles. And so this becomes a huge challenge, because the other area where Pittsburgh is really, really good is key situations getting sacks. TJ Watt is obviously a sack machine in general, but a lot of his sacks come in key spots. And so can you prevent key spots from existing by staying in good down and distance? And it's like, oh, third and four, how, you know, middle of the second quarter, middle of the field. Okay, we'll just keep on rolling. But this is the big question for me this weekend now with B-Rob out, is can this offense stay on schedule? Can it sustain drives? And then the other thing too, I'll say with B-Rob in the red zone, can they finish drives without him? Because he has been a weapon in the red zone, and we know at times they have struggled to finish drives this season. And so if he is not available to be that battering ram down in the red zone, can they finish drives, especially against a Pittsburgh team that is not built to come from behind, has been pretty rough in the first quarter, and has been lights out third quarter this year, has not allowed a single point in the third quarter. So definitely interesting breaking news to react to here to start the show. The show is the Hoffman Show. It's on the Team 980. It's always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up next, let's dive into some more of those keys to the game. We get to that, how the Commanders come out on top next, and then you'll hear from Logan coming up at 4:30. Take command on a Friday here on the Hoffman Show. All right, it's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming now live on YouTube as well, at least for right now. Hopefully we've gotten some video stuff figured out, and we'll see if we can keep it rolling throughout the show. We might have to bounce out on the internet side of it. But remember, this is why you listen to the radio show on the radio, or perhaps on the free Odyssey app. We are always there. And if you just love our beautiful faces, then I'm sorry. All right, Anthony, keys to the game. Steelers, Commanders. I think that the stat that Andrew Filippone gave us yesterday about the Commanders' first quarter success versus the Steelers' first quarter woes could ultimately be the deciding factor in this game. Could, I'm not saying will, could be the deciding factor in this game. I mean, the Commanders have been one of the best first quarter teams, especially recently. They've come out in so many of these games and just bop, 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 go, score, get up on teams. We saw them put away Carolina early. We saw them match teams like Baltimore, where it, you know, that game got away a little bit in the second half, and then Washington was able to pull back in. But by and large, this has been a team that has played really well early on in games. And they haven't been as solid in the fourth quarter, which means, you know, unfortunately, the full 60 minutes is probably going to be a sweat fest. But this is a Pittsburgh offense that is not really built to come back from behind. And so I am pretty curious to see what Washington does if they get up early and if they can hold a lead. Like, if you can get up even 10 points, how does Pittsburgh's offense change? And can Washington, especially if you're just joining us, breaking news, Brian Robinson out for Sunday, if Brian Robinson is unavailable to help make things a little bit easier?
Yeah, no, I think starting fast is definitely huge. But Craig, we've seen in the NFL time and time again how hard it is to hold a lead. We saw the Vikings come back on the Colts, down 28. We've seen, you know, in a Super Bowl, we've seen the Patriots come back on the Falcons. So it is extremely hard.
Man, you really, some personal shots there. One to your own self, and two to DQ. Dang.
I was just saying, I mean, that
it's
was the first.
Friday, man.
Those are the first two that came to mind. Easy for everybody to remember.
That is true.
But it is insanely hard to hold leads. Even yesterday, if you look at the Thursday night football game, the Bengals go up 21-7, and guess what? The Ravens come back and take the lead. So I think starting fast is important in every game. It's just, you know, it's so hard to sustain the success and carry it throughout a game, especially against as good of a defense as the Pittsburgh Steelers that we're going to be facing on Sunday. But I love the key. I love us being able to, you know, try to start fast.
Yeah, and that's always, you know, we kind of joke that we're the, you know, between this show and Take Command, like we're the game flow show. We talk about it all the time, but the style of play is really, really important. If you want to think of it as that way as opposed to, you know, game flow, style of play, it's really, really critical into what Washington wants to do, and it's really critical for every team. And so these teams are built to play a certain way. And for Pittsburgh, this is a team that is built on their defense. They are 100% built to lean into that. The way they call plays, the way their personnel is, the way that their offense is designed, the way that their defense, by the way, is designed, is to play with a lead or in a close game. But to be behind where, you know, oh my God, this team's just going to run right at us. Well, okay, well now TJ Watt's best attribute. Like, look, he's fantastic against the run. I am by no means suggesting that, hey, cakewalk running on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously not. We just shared some of the run statistics in the last segment that they are the second best EPA per rush team in the NFL. And on down the list of really impressive run statistics because they've been good. And that's playing a lot of close games where teams are still able to run the football on them. So, or are willing to try to run the football on them. It's not like they're winning in a bunch of blowouts, even if there are a couple in the last 3 weeks, the Jets game. But even that Jets game, like, that wasn't a blowout till late. The Jets into the third, if not fourth quarter, were in that game. Mm-hmm. They all blur together, but the Raiders, you know, okay, fine. Giants last week were in the game the entire time until their running back got knocked out of the game in Tyrone Tracy. So, Pittsburgh definitely the best thing about their team, the most dangerous thing, is they'll turn you over if you put the ball in the air, whether it's sack fumbles, they've got guys who will pick you off, all that kind of stuff. And so for Washington to get ahead seems extra critical, but we'll see. What is your key to the game?
So since you went offense, I'm going to go defense. I think a huge key, I think it's the most obvious one, stopping T.J. Watt. And the thing is, we've seen Cliff Kingsbury be able to scheme around some of the better, you know, defensive linemen in the league. We have the reigning NFL defensive MVP in Myles Garrett, who walked away from that game with no QB hits, no tackles, which is insane. Like, he didn't affect the game at all. And then also last week against Dexter Lawrence, where he didn't have any QB hits and no sacks. So I'm not worried about whether or not TJ will be able to impact the game, because I have the utmost confidence in Cliff to be able to scheme around it. I will say, though, with no B-Rob, how does that necessarily impact the offense as a whole, just because he's been able to help us, you know, be in third and short or third and manageable, as opposed to like when we didn't have him, where we faced a lot of third and long, and it wasn't like it was when we first started the season. So I'm more so just looking at the offense as a whole without B-Rob.
Yeah, I think that that's always going to be huge. And then the other thing, too, is like they've been able to go to the well again for Terry so often this season. How many big catches does he have? And, you know, we talk about players not plays, or Cliff talks about players not plays. And then I go, hey, did you hear Cliff talk about players not plays? It's almost like every offensive coordinator in the league should think about that. It's third down, and, oh, that guy just wasn't the primary read on that play, and we like that concept. I don't know. Make him the primary read. Anyway, sorry. Small bit of rage that just came out of me on a Friday. That becomes a lot harder this week, because Joey Porter Jr. is a really, really good man-to-man corner. And not that I don't think Terry can get him, because I think Terry can get basically anybody. He's that good. But it's definitely not as sure of a bet. And there is a little bit of an elevated risk, because he's got good ball skills. He's got great length. You know, if Terry can get him on a double move or attack him with a stem, and, you know, that's something that Terry did on one of his big plays last week, 2 weeks ago. I don't remember at this point. Again, the games are all starting to run together. This was easier to do the analysis when there was like three games that have been played. Now all of a sudden, Anthony, it's week 10. When did that happen? But Terry can get behind just about anybody. And those comebacks and things like that are areas where they've lived well. But I do think that, you know, without B-Rob, that hurts your play action game a little bit. But Jaden is a runner, I think, could be a huge, huge, huge factor in this game. And I think that, like, Noah Brown and Luke and OZ and Diami, I think they could have a big role too. And maybe this is a little bit of a preview of the pick six, but I think that either Diami as a guy catching some screens could have a big day. I also think, like, I'm gonna highlight something that Mark Bullock has said, because he's right. I just saw Mark say it first on the internet, so he's gonna get the credit. Mark, of course, breaking down the tape on Substack, and used to work for the Post and the Athletic, for those that don't know. But he's like, there's gonna be a game where we look up and Luke McCaffrey has six catches for 112 yards and two touchdowns, and people are gonna be like, where the hell did that come from? Dude's open all the time. And he's often not the primary read because he's Luke McCaffrey, but he does a good job. He runs his routes well, and Jaden is just getting the ball other places, or there's been a couple where he has looked at him, and there's Montez Sweat with just enough pressure to cause an overthrow where Luke is wide open for a touchdown. One of these days, the Luke McCaffrey game is going to happen. And so if they can get one of those, like, okay, one of the guys you rely on isn't there. Another guy you rely on has one of his toughest matchups of the season. Can the others, to borrow from Shaq, can the others step up? But can the others step up? I think it's a obviously huge question that'll help determine success in this game.
Yeah, the others definitely huge. And I was also just thinking about Zach Ertz, him possibly being covered by Minka, who is just an all-world safety. I don't necessarily know if that'll be his matchup, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they are matched up, just because that is Jaden Daniels' security blanket. Like, he loves to go to Zach Ertz across the middle, and sometimes even on some shallow routes. So I think that's going to be pivotal, but we won't have to sustain drives. And I don't know how necessarily aggressive we're going to be against this team just because of the game flow, but I think we're going to have to be aggressive. We can't necessarily, you know, just settle for field goals. And that's also another thing, the field goal situation.
Fun fact, I got to talk to Brooke Pryor about our guest at 5 o'clock about kicking because she wrote a big article a couple weeks ago on the kicking game on ESPN. And as I was preparing to have Brooke on today, I stumbled across it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but we're going to talk to Brooke about that a little bit. But yeah, Seibert kicked today. He's been banged up a little bit this week, but they worked out other kickers. And if they don't sign someone tomorrow or have someone on the practice squad, I think he's probably good to go. But definitely something to keep an eye on for on Sunday. How aggressive are they on fourth down? Like there's all the game management stuff that's pretty interesting as well. Okay, when we get back here on the Hoffman Show, we are going to let you hear Logan Paulson's take on how the Commanders' defense can attack a very, very interesting and are they good? I don't know. Pittsburgh offense. A little take command for you on a Friday next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Anthony Haney there, super producer of the show, who will go head-to-head against me in an hour, picking each and every game of the NFL weekend. We're on a heater, bro. I know that, like, yeah, last week I had a pretty historic week, but you were not far behind me.
Yeah, two games, but, you know, there's still work to be done, Craig.
There is work to be done in the head-to-head, but, like, all you can do is just keep winning. And we went what, like 12-3? I went like 14-1 or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Ridiculous. So stay tuned at 5:30 and then pick opposite me because there's no way I'm that good 2 weeks in a row. Right now though, time for a little take command here on the Hoffman Show. Logan Paulson and I breaking down this Commanders Steelers matchup. Again, breaking news that is not relevant necessarily to what you're about to hear, but we did record this yesterday morning. We did not know Brian Robinson was going to be out. He is going to be out, although this segment is on the Commanders' defense, if I sent Anthony the right one. And then I will say, though, we did not know yet that Marshon Lattimore was going to be out either. So at the end, we talk a little bit about what he can mean long-term to this team. Without further ado, though, Logan, me, Steelers, Commanders, now.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It is the Take Command podcast. I'm Craig Hoffman. He is Logan Paulson. And we are talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers and Washington Commanders, perhaps the best game of the NFL weekend, Logan. It's going to be a fun one. Two teams that I think have a lot of mirroring of each other. And we're going to start off talking about how the Commanders' defense is going to hit Russell Wilson or try to hit Russell Wilson, how they're going to attack Russell Wilson, and a Pittsburgh offense that has really taken off since he became the quarterback.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting watch. You know, I watched the Jets game and watched the Giants game, excuse me. And one of the things that kind of struck me is just how hard it feels like their offense is. You know, and the Jets defense, I was really, you know, they're kind of getting a lot of heat in terms of not being very good or as good as they've been in years past. But I was really blown away with the speed and the violence that they play with and how they play in coverage. And so it kind of makes sense. The Giants kind of same thing. It just seems hard for them to execute. And I know, you know, one of the things we're going to talk about is, you know, Russell Wilson and how the offense has kind of opened up. I'm going to use air quotes for that. And he is pushing the football down the field a little bit more. George Pickens obviously is a great 50-50 contested catch guy, and he kind of makes the most of those opportunities. But the thing about it is, like, if you watch the Jets game, their offense is 50-50 contested catch opportunities, whether it's George Pickens or Pat Freiermuth, the tight end, making really just spectacular plays.
Yeah.
And to me,
on a lot of similar concepts, too.
Right. It's not like there's this really diverse, you know, like Arthur Smith, when he was in Atlanta, was kind of going crazy, you know, just all these different quarterback run looks, all these different play action looks, all these different ways to get to outside zone, all these different, you know, just a very wide, you could tell they were carrying a lot of plays. And here it feels like they kind of got their 10 or 15 third down plays they like to run. They got their 10 or 15 first down plays they like to run, and they're going to run them. And the thing that really jumped out to me is, like, when you watch a team like Atlanta, I think is a good comparison because that's where Arthur Smith was before. Like, they were incredibly locked in on the details. Like, offensive line, you could tell they worked a ton of combinations. They knew how to target runs. And when you watch the Steelers, it is a little off. Like, the double teams are on different levels. They're on different timings. And now they've had a lot of injuries on the offensive line, which have made it tough, I think, to probably find some cohesion. But I came out of the film being like, this offense is not at all what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a hyper-efficient running game. What I mean by that is just like, hey, here's 4 yards, here's 3 yards, here's a 6 yard run. And we're just going to keep in that kind of 4.5 yard rushing average all the time. But it's not really like that. It's like bang your head against the wall, bang your head against the wall, bang your head against the wall. And I literally mean bang your head against the wall for like a 2 yard gain and then hope that Najee Harris finds a breakout run late in the game and makes that average look normal. Couple that with this 50-50 opportunity thing. Like, there's something inherently risky about those opportunities because you're going to miss on them half the time. And I feel like that's the thing that is so interesting is they're getting all this kind of excitement in the national media. They're getting all this excitement, I'm sure, in Pittsburgh. But their offense is like walking a razor's edge because if George Pickens doesn't catch two of those balls, they might lose the game to the Jets and they might lose the game to the Giants. And I think that's the thing that I come out of it being like, how good is this offense really?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And it's something where when they had Justin Fields in the game earlier in the season, there was a lot of questioning of the move to Russell Wilson because one of the things they had was a little bit more efficient of a run game, at least production-wise. Maybe you watched it, some of that tape back too.
He scrambles well and like it brings up the floor a little bit that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like you had this different element and people were kind of just like, why would you want to lose that? And you're going to lose some of that with Russ because the quarterback, as we've seen here, like when the quarterback run is not a threat, then defenses have to react differently. It's harder to get the good box counts, especially if you're not locked in on the details, like the task becomes a lot harder. And then Russ comes in and they've been significantly better from a point output standpoint. So I think that is kind of an interesting thing that if you're Washington, perhaps you're like, man, can we get those numbers to come back in our favor? Can we get this the play to kind of match the scoreboard output? Because since Russ took over, I think it was the Vegas game, they scored 32. They scored 37 against the Jets and then 26 against the Giants. I know they've had some defensive and special teams touchdowns in there as well, but clearly they're producing. But like to your point, it's funny to watch them because you're just like, oh, that was kind of it's third and 10. There's like a mesh concept over the middle that Russ can't see because he's 5'10". And he's just going to throw the 50-50 ball to the outside. And, oh, there's a little bit of window dressing where they ran it out of a stack, and it's more of like a slot fade to Pickens versus the last time they ran it in this game where they just lined him up outside as an isolation route. But it is so reliant on that stuff, which obviously, by the way, makes the Lattimore trade all that much more interesting. We'll see. We're recording this Thursday morning, so we have no idea if he's going to be able to play or not, and if so, how much. But it is the kind of thing that's specific to this matchup. It's going to be interesting. And it also, I think, explains why they went and got another guy who can get 50-50 balls in Mike Williams, longtime Charger, obviously was with the Jets and got traded to Pittsburgh this week.
Yeah, 100%. Because I think, it's, again, George Pickens is doing a great job. And I really watching the film, like I was really impressed with him, his body control, his ability to track those footballs, his ability to, I said body control, but like just the acrobatic kind of torso independent of the lower half type stuff that he's doing. He's just a really impressive athlete with long arms and he's pretty physical at the catch point. Like it's awesome. But at some point people are gonna be like, we're not going to let you do this all the time. We're going to play some type of role coverage. And so getting a guy like Mike Williams in there, I think is a really great point because what is he excellent at? He's excellent at 50-50 contested catches also. And he's kind of got this nice vertical speed. He's a similar frame. Now he's always negotiating some type of injury. But I do think that if this is what the offense is going to be in terms of downfield passing attack, like that's what you want. You know, like this, you want more body types to kind of fit that. You can maybe move George Pickens around the formation a little bit. And it's not to say they don't have other weapons. Obviously, Calvin Austin III is really an impressive mover in terms of kind of a slot receiver. I actually think of him more as kind of like a Tyreek Hill-ish type player in the sense that like you think of him as like this kind of small slot guy, but he does have such good vertical speed. Like he's hit some explosive plays, like really explosive plays down the field. I can't remember. I think it was a Chargers game. He caught like a dig and then went like 50 yards or 60 yards for a touchdown, kind of outrunning the defense. And then He had one against the Giants where, you know, Drew Phillips, the nickel from New York, has outside leverage on a corner, does a little double stick, and then you can't keep up with his vertical speed. So they do have weapons. And then the tight ends, obviously, Darnell Washington, Pat Freiermuth are like, Darnell Washington is great in line. Pat Freiermuth's not the best in line, but pretty good. And then they both catch the ball pretty well. So they do have kind of this array, this nice collection of offensive skill positions. And you're like, wow, like this is pretty good. I think the thing is, it feels hard. I think the best way to characterize it feels like the first year of an offense and like how it should feel, right? You're just not in on every single detail. You can tell the quarterback and the receiver aren't always on the same page. And I think that's one of the reasons why they kind of leaned into this, 50-50 passing attack. And I think the other thing is they're not, again, like Najee Harris, I think, is playing pretty good football, but he's not a great like home run threat necessarily. He's a good like kind of get on base runner, and you lose explosive plays in the offense that way. And now he's playing well. Like this is the best I've seen him play, and probably since he's been drafted the last three games. So kudos and credit to him. But the offensive line is getting banged up, not super clean. So it is an interesting watch. And I think it kind of speaks to the general theme of this Steelers preview is that they are a defensive-led football team, and they know that. And they don't have to be, you know, picking up yards like crazy, because they can kind of rely on the defense to keep them in football games. They can stick with the type of play calling they want to stick with. And they could honestly, quite frankly, survive in this 50-50 world, because let's say we throw five of them and we hit two, we're going to have more opportunities because we're going to get new drives because the defense is going to get turnovers like they did against the Jets. They had two turnovers against the Giants. They had two turnovers. Like, they're going to get you the ball back. And they're an interesting team in this way too. And I think this speaks again to this defensive driven element, is they protect the football on offense and they turn it over on defense. I think they're plus 10 in the turnover margin. So like, that's how they live. And because of that game flow, which we always talk about on the show, they can kind of be what they are, which is not an overly exciting offense until Russ came in, which, and again, these 50-50s, like, I want to just make this so, so clear. It's 50-50 for a reason. Like, if you miss on any one of those, your offense is in 3rd and 10 and the drive's over. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it is. And I think that's the thing.
But I will say this. Sometimes they do throw them on the 3rd and 10. So it's like an arm punt situation where it's like, you know, I think that is maybe the slightly higher intelligence version of what they do. Is like, a lot of times you get to watching the film, and I'm sure this is really bad for you, depending on what program you're using to watch the film. I know when old Game Pass, when the down and distance wasn't as readily available, sometimes you just get in the film and you're like, wait, what down is it? Where am I
what
in the
planet,
game?
What planet am I on? What
year is it? You just kind of look up and you're like, oh, I'm in the 3rd quarter. When did that happen? The new NFL Pro, they have it, make it pretty easy. But, you know, even then, like, sometimes I'm not even looking at it. I'm just watching play after play after play. And so there's a couple of those when I'm watching the Steelers this morning. Like, I look up and I was like, oh, that was a 3rd down. Like, oh, that was a 3rd down. Okay. And so they do pick their spots, I think, in an intelligent way, where if they miss the 50-50 ball, it's okay, we're just going to punt. Or if it gets picked off, it's a punt. It's an arm punt. Versus, hey, we're going to try this on 2nd and 4, where a lot of teams do take shots for good reasons, because defenses kind of, you know, get a little aggressive. Hey, we got to get them in 3rd and long. Like, the calls change, you know, depending on the D coordinator. But it's, if you miss one of those on 2nd and 4, now you're in 3rd and 4 when you could have been in 3rd and 1 with just running the ball for a nasty 3 yards again. And so the picking of the spots and kind of the general game management, I do feel like, is something they do fairly well, which is unsurprising for a Mike Tomlin team. But at the same time, it is a pretty precarious way to live. And I think, to your point on the running game, perhaps more importantly, I think they have a reputation, because they're the Steelers, that this running game is awesome. Like, statistically, they're pretty mediocre. They're 13th in EPA per rush. They're 19th in success rate. And if you're 19th in success rate and you're not getting explosive plays to make up for it on the other end, like, you're, how successful are your successful runs? Not overly successful. There's not a ton of explosives. Like, that's a really, really, really hard way to live. And, you know, the obvious final point here to make, to kind of bring all your points home together, is if you live on turnovers, you're either going to have to do something that no one has done to Washington, or you're not going to survive, because Washington has fewer turnovers through 9 games than any team since 1933. They've turned it over 3 times all year.
Which is Like, talk about just an insane statistic. Like,
yes,
I know there's been a lot of crazy statistics. That's probably the craziest one, but I think that's 100% right. Like, it's like you think about the Baltimore Ravens as a good point of comparison and the way they run the football, and they are committed to running the football 100%. There is an efficiency. Their offensive line knows we're targeted. We're going to finish blocks. We're going to be syncing on double teams. We understand, and we've worked together enough in the front that we understand each other. And there's creases and space, and we're on the same level in the combination. And that's just not the case, quite frankly, with the Steelers. And it's a little bit of a slog. I think they're number one in rushing attempts, or very close to number one in rushing attempts. If you can look that up for me, Craig, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I can look it up real quick.
And again, like when you're number one in rushing attempts and your EPA, your efficiency per play, is like 19th, that's also not very good, because you're just kind of lighting money on fire, and you're just like, we're going to waste these plays for something that's not very efficient. And it's interesting, because again, if you compare them to like Baltimore, I think, you know, obviously Derrick Henry will find you an explosive rush opportunity and kind of reward your patience for running the football. And with the Steelers, it's not quite the same way. And I think it is a little bit of a slog. And I think there's, again, defensive driven football team, a little bit of a slog. I think you bring up a great point about the efficiency numbers, because it, to me, when I watch it, you feel it. You're like, this is not what it needs to be.
So they are fifth overall in rushing attempts, but three of the four teams ahead of them, which includes Washington, by the way, it's Baltimore, Washington, Philly, Green Bay. Green Bay, Washington, Baltimore have all played an extra game. So I'm guessing they are second, probably. Baltimore's, you know, a solid like 30 or 28 rushes ahead of them. So maybe
that's also maybe, including rushing quarterbacks. You know, you mentioned Philly and Jaden.
That's a great point. So maybe Lamar. I would guess based off of this, they are number one in rushing attempts by running backs. Although I guess they did have Fields playing for the first, seven
but
games.
But also they had, I was thinking about Green Bay, like that they're a little bit outlier, but they had Malik Willis playing for a little bit. So all those teams, their quarterbacks have run the ball quite a bit.
For sure. And, you know, it's not something you see they're going to do a ton with Russ, but, you know, they can get him on the perimeter for sure on some of this play action stuff. I think that's something else that stands out, is like the amount of drop back pass that they have is pretty minimal. They are running the ball, or it is play action, which is hard on a defense, especially a defense in Washington that has been sucked up into play action fakes quite a bit. The good news is Russ doesn't really throw the middle of the field a ton. At least he doesn't seem to. It's never really been his thing. He doesn't really attack the middle of the field, in part because I literally don't think he can see it. He does a good job at time finding those windows. And he's got obviously a decade of experience, but he is very dangerous outside the numbers. He's very dangerous deep. He's very dangerous on second reaction plays. And I think that is something that Dan Quinn is preaching in a major, major way. And obviously Dan knows Russ real well from their days in Seattle. But Dan said at the press conference on Wednesday, like, we have been, you know, our thing this week with him is no play is ever dead. No player is ever dead. And so the ability to rip a ball 50 yards down the field on the run is very, very special. And for a defense that at times has struggled with some of that stuff, and for I think of Juice this week, like, he's got to make sure that it's clean. If you get in a fight with George Pickens down the field, let's not pick up a flag. I realize that if you have 25 on your back, apparently refs are just going to throw it anyway, no matter whether there's actually PI or not. But he has a reputation, and he's got to play within that reputation until he can break it. So definitely going to be an interesting week on that front. And then obviously how the run defense plays is probably the most important thing, because if all of a sudden you give up some explosives on those, well, now you're in a bad way.
Yeah, so I think the thing that ultimately the question is, like, what do you do versus the Steelers offense if you're the Commanders? And I really think it's got to be pretty committed to stopping the run. And I think you got to be willing to play a little bit of man-to-man coverage in the back end, which Joe Witt Jr. has not been that reticent to do, because, and it makes sense as to why, because, you know, you don't want to give up the explosive play. The other thing, after just thinking about it right now in terms of the Giants game, is you can trust your offense. So much in the same way that the Pittsburgh offense trusts their defense, you know, to kind of keep them in football games, Joe Witt Jr. is always playing this too high safety structure. And I think he's also just trusting that our offense is going to put him in a good point differential. And then the only thing that hurts you is the explosive play. So if that's what you're counting on, if that's what this team dynamic, you know, of the Commanders' offense and defense kind of symbiotic relationship, then that's a fine plan too. But I do think, if you want to commit to stopping the run against the Steelers, I think you need to put more resources in the box, because they're going to do a lot of it. They're just going to do it and do it and do it. And you got to be ready to stop it. And the other thing, talking about Benjamin St. Juice, I think this is an interesting point. Like, against bigger receivers, I feel like he does a little bit better. You know, I feel like that's kind of more in his wheelhouse. Like, obviously, gives up the touchdown to Mike Evans. But outside of that, I think he actually had a pretty solid performance. And then, obviously, against Zay Flowers, who's a smaller, quicker guy, not quite as efficient. So I do feel like this George Pickens thing might actually be okay for Benjamin St. Juice. He'll probably get a PI. He'll probably give up a big catch. But, like, in terms of down to down, like,
yeah,
like, I can live with that.
But that's the danger of Pickens, right, is that he'll get – he's not exactly the most lethal down-to-down guy, but he'll get you 50 yards. You know, he can have a three-catch, 75 yards, two-touchdown day. That's the kind of guy that he is.
And also, you know, the thing that gets them going against the New York Jets is a big PI by Sauce Gardner down the field on Pickens, you know, and, like, that gets them inside the five. They have three downs in there. They end up scoring a touchdown on a fade to Pickens, like – I 100% agree to that. It's just, I think you just got to, I think what I would do is I just play the percentages, quite honestly. I'd just be like, you're not going to hit on all these balls you're throwing down the field. And I can live with, I got to think of a number, like three. I can live with three explosive plays, you know, but I can't, you know, and like, I got to call the game that way. And I think what, you know, when I do that coach's show with Dan, the game plan, which airs on Sunday morning before games, like, he's always like, you can't take everything away. So we have to prioritize and triage what we want to take away. And I think that's the million-dollar question is what's the most dangerous thing to take away? And over the last two games, it's been George Pickens over the run game. But they're so committed to running the football, you can't just ignore it, I think, is the thing that I keep coming back to. It's like, yeah, you want to take George Pickens away, but they're going to run the ball 30 times. So if they start getting an efficient run game, then what do you do? You know what I mean?
Right. And that becomes a hard thing. If Mike Williams plays and some of their other weapons get going too, because you know, what you could do then is like, hey, we're going to leave our number two. So Sainer still, or maybe Juice. If, again, we don't know if Lattimore's playing yet with the hamstring injury, but this kind of is a great illustration of why Lattimore's so important. Is right now to shut down George Pickens and to make Russ go, that's not open, you would just slide a safety over there and say, okay, we're kind of bracketing, doubling Pickens on a every snap basis or on any obvious passing down situation so that Russ doesn't even think about throwing that deep ball and someone else has to beat us. But down in, down out, like we're gonna send an extra body that direction. Our other safety's down in the box playing the run. Well, then where are you exposed? You're exposed at your number two corner. Well, when the number one is Marshawn Lattimore, you don't need the safety help on the number one anymore. You just trust him to shut it down. And now you have an extra body to throw around in the box while still having help over top, kind of in both directions, a center fielder type. So I think it's a good illustration of why a guy like Lattimore is so valuable, and how much you change the game plan and the aggressiveness that it allows you to have in stopping other things. But as of now, we don't know if he's going to play. And so we'll see, and something to definitely keep an eye out for as we move towards Sunday. All right, that was Take Command, and you can hear the rest of the podcast, including the breakdown of the other side of the ball, Commanders offense versus the Steelers defense, by checking out the Take Command podcast wherever you get yours. Also, of course, we do know now that Marshawn Lattimore will not play. Did not know that when we recorded that on Thursday. The last part of that show, too, is something that we talked about yesterday on the show at this time about Jaden Daniels and his potential in the MVP discussion and kind of his place in the NFL, especially if he plays well against the Steelers. So if you want Logan's take on that, check out the Take Command podcast at some point before the game this week. When we get back, we'll check in with Brooke Pryor, my good friend from ESPN. She is their Steelers reporter. That is next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.